Happy 2024 to all of the Rossafari listeners. Woo! Hello, I'm John Rossi. I'm a touring drummer with a passion for animal conservation. When I'm on the road, I spend as much time as possible visiting zoos, aquariums, and conservation organizations. Now, I want to share those places with you. I'll be talking to keepers, vets, conservationists, anyone who can help me in my mission of connecting my people to animals through their people. Join me on my Rossafari. Hi, hello, how are you? Welcome back to the Rossafari podcast and our first episode of 2024. Now, you may have noticed, especially if you're a regular listener, that I didn't do the guests introducing themselves at the beginning of this episode like I normally do. And honestly, the reason behind that isn't something new to the podcast or isn't that I'm keeping them secret or anything. It's because when they introduced themselves, my two guests on this episode were so funny and the conversation just launched so naturally that there was no easy way to just stick it at the beginning. Plus, it's the beginning of a new year, so I thought I'll be sneaky and do that instead. Because honestly, y'all, this episode is so much fun. I am bringing you my conversation with Sarah and Eric, who both work at the North Carolina Zoo. Now, normally, when we have two guests on the podcast at the same time, including the last time that we did an episode from North Carolina, they are people who work in the same area. In this case, that's not what happened. Sarah and Eric work in separate areas of the zoo, but are just really good talkers, interesting people, and also get along really well. So this is an episode where you're going to hear about a bunch of different stuff, from lions and chimpanzees to small desert animals and mouse lemurs and all this cool stuff, just from two really passionate people who love what they do. And since Sarah and Eric don't work together all the time or even get to see each other all the time, they were kind of intrigued by each other. So fairly early on in the interview, I told them that, you know, if they had questions or follow-ups for each other, they could run with it. And they ran with it. As a matter of fact, there are whole portions of this episode where they're just talking to each other and I'm just chilling and laughing along with the funny bits, which I just think is really cool and a really fun way to start the 2024 Rossafari episodes. And then after the main interview, you're actually going to get to hear Sarah and I hanging out with the chimps at the zoo. Now, obviously, they're protected contact, but we did something pretty cool, and you'll have to go ahead and listen to that part to find out what that is. I'm very sneaky that way, very sneaky. But yeah, it was such a good time to be at the North Carolina Zoo, and I'm so excited to be sharing this with y'all. And okay, so the other thing that I want to point out before we get rolling is just the normal housekeeping stuff. So make sure you hit subscribe so you don't miss any other episodes. Make sure you're following along on socials at Rossafari or on TikTok at Rossafari Pod. Also, don't forget that you can support the podcast for as little as $3 a month by going to patreon.com/Rossafari. As a matter of fact, you know, my last episode from last year, the non-zoo news one, was a bunch of the patron bonus audio that you can hear if you become a patron throughout the year. And this episode does have some pretty fun patron bonus content. There's some really fun audio from the start of the interview before we really got into it all, and I'm pretty excited about that. I'd also like to say thank you to my newest patron, Kevin Williams. Thank you so much for joining the team. I super appreciate it. I'm glad to have you on board, and I hope you and all of the other patrons end up really enjoying the bonus audio from this week, because it is a lot of fun. All right, so without further ado, let's get to this thing. Here is my interview with Sarah and Eric of the North Carolina Zoo.
All right. So why don't we start off by you both telling me who you are and where you work and what you do there?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm Sarah. I started out working here with the Chimps, Lions, and Lemurs, and then I have recently, within the last year, switched to a swing position. So now I also work with the gorillas and baboons because more primates are always better.
Oh, you primate people. Primate people are such primate people.
I love them.
I can tell. That's awesome.
Their feces are too human-like.
Stop.
Well, I guess that's my transition. I'm Eric. I'm a desert keeper here. So that big old glass bubble dome in the desert area here at the North Carolina Zoo, that's my realm. And I work with a mix of mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians, inverts, and even some fish.
Ooh, yeah. Fancy.
All right. He gets it all.
So it sounds like we're hitting basically every part of the zoo that I didn't just hit with the polar stuff. So that's pretty cool. All right. So let's get into it. I always start off by asking kind of your history and what got you to this point. So let's start with you, Sarah, and just kind of tell me, you know, did you know that you liked animals when you were a kid?
Yeah. Oh. I grew up on a farm.
Okay.
In the middle of nowhere here in North Carolina with cows. I went to lamb camp. A lot of people don't know what that is, but I learned how to show sheep
lamb
when I was a kid. So yeah, I fell in love with animals. Realized in high school I did an internship at a vet. Realized I'm just too much of a delicate flower for that. I can't. I'm delicate. I'm sensitive. And so I found this zoo and aquarium science program here in North Carolina. It's an associate's program, and I applied and didn't get in. It was too late. I missed the deadline, but someone dropped out, and so I got in last minute.
Oh.
And so I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. So I spent 2 years doing that, where I actually interned at the Greensboro Science Center, the Virginia Zoo in Norfolk, and actually here at the NC Zoo as well. And that was about 10 years ago. And then I got hired on at the Science Center. I worked there for about 6 years total, working with just about everything there. And then I moved to Zoo Atlanta and worked with their 21 gorillas.
That is a lot.
I
of
love
gorillas.
Primates, but even that's a lot.
they do love primates.
They do
down
love
there.
Their primates in they Atlanta.
Do.
Yes,
they
yes. At that point, I think they held the record for the most gorillas in a North American zoo at 21. And then I got to come home and got to come here to North Carolina. So yeah,
amazing. Mm-hmm. The Indianapolis Zoo is getting a chimp colony, and they are bringing in 30 chimps. And
in
I was
one
recent,
troop.
I don't know how it's going to be split up, but I believe the goal
mega
is that they're going to try to do
I
a mega
know.
Troop. And the vet, I was recently hanging out with him at the AAZV conference, is terrified.
If only they were all bonobos.
I don't know. It's still awkward and weird.
Like, oh, yeah. And the chimps aren't awkward and
well,
weird.
Well, yes, but you have to choose. You have to choose between the two, like love and war.
but anyway, yeah, that is coming soon.
Love can be weird.
Yes, love can be weird. Okay.
By
some
the way,
of our chimps are lovers and it's still weird.
I hope I'm not the only one that's already like imagining you at some sort of lamb camp. I'm like seeing like a Boy Scout camp with tents and like you're waking up in the morning and your next door neighbor are two lambs that just wake up too and you're all just going to camp together.
No, that would be cool though. We didn't spend the night. No, it was just a kind of a break for my mom was a high school librarian. And so she just kind of dropped me and my brother off for the day to get us out of the house in the summer. And so we would bathe the lambs. We use like Dawn dish soap and like wash them and make them show ready. But because they have to look good and they have to get their wool sheared.
Wow,
and then, the first day is just pure chaos because there's either children dragging lambs or lambs dragging children. And it's just insanity, but a lot of fun.
And
good
that's
character
why
building.
You, and that's why you work with chimps.
Exactly. Yep. I can't do hoofstock. I like them, but I'm too loud. They don't like me.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's quite the image. I like that. That's really great. And then, so what is your story?
My story actually begins before I was born. My mom was actually a vet tech at the Philadelphia Zoo. When I was born, actually, she was taking care of a lot of different orphaned animals There is a famous picture out there of her sticking baby me in a fake pouch with a live baby kangaroo she was raising at the same time.
So it's so weird you ended up working with animals.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Strange.
I mean,
out of left field.
Yeah, I mean, my first curator I worked with, there's literally pictures of me as a toddler and him letting me just feed elephants and all that. So it was like, you know, it was a different age. So you could say I was born into it, to say the least. But then I went to Delaware Valley University. It was college when I went there, but they're now a university. Got a bachelor's in zoo science there. Through that program, I got to intern at Elmwood Park Zoo.
Woo!
My first zoo, Elmwood, and I interned there, and then I worked with a behavioralist, Fang Lu, for a little bit when I left college. And I was working at Elmwood a little bit as well, part-time and through the summers as educator, mall boy, where they had a mall store, so I did education there.
Wait, pause. Elmwood Park Zoo had a mall store?
Yep.
At what mall?
It was the Montgomery Mall.
No way.
Or no. Was it Montgomery? Oh, I can't even remember which
mall.
One
of the malls.
Yeah, one of the local malls.
Zoo had a store in the mall?
Yeah, so they apparently had it for free pretty much. And they set it up like a, almost like a nature shop or a gift shop at a zoo. Oh. They actually had a big screen TV where they could like Planet Earth or like Disney movies and all that. And the idea behind it was the fact that they wanted people to know there was a zoo in their own town, because the director, who's still there, Al, he always talked about how he hated the fact that there was T-shirts out there that literally said, yes, there's a zoo in Norristown. So the idea was it was a place that the mall actually, I think, let us use for free because they had space and like they're like, well, might as well give it to the zoo. So that was there for, I want to say, a year or so. So during that time, I was a educator on the weekends while I was still in college. So I was working with the education animals, but then I would go in the morning and in the afternoon with a parrot, a snake, an armadillo, or something, and educate the public, as well as obviously getting people to understand there's a zoo. Because like at that store, you could even buy a zoo membership. So it was a great way to get people out there, as well as making a little more income for the zoo with all of these people. I was even there on Black Friday, and I was no fool. I brought Sally the cockatoo, who literally screamed across that mall. So it was like a big old alarm for everyone to come in and check us out on Black Friday.
That's such a cool idea.
I love this so much.
That's so awesome. I never would have thought that that was even a thing.
Eventually, the mall wanted money, and I think that's why it eventually closed. But I mean, the amount of memberships and the amount of just people finding out. And it basically was an outreach spot for us, where it was all these people in a very populated area that, I mean, you could literally go down the road. Like, we would be in zoo staff shirts, go down the road for lunch, and people are like, oh, wow, you guys came all the way from the Philadelphia Zoo? No, we came from the one two blocks away. And they're like, there's a zoo here? We're like, yeah, there's giraffe and jaguars, mountain lions, we're AZA accredited, all that good stuff. And yeah, so it was great for that, and definitely got my foot in the door. And basically, I did all of it. I was, I think I had technically like 7 job titles when I was there, because they kept transitioning. Like, my first one was mall educator. Then I think I was a part-time educator. Then I was a full-time seasonal educator. Then I was a part-time keeper. Then I was a reindeer keeper.
Okay.
And then I was, then I worked with Fung, but it was at Elmwood in the bird habitat that one year. And then I was a bird keeper. And then finally, because I finally graduated at that point, I was a full-time keeper there. Then I was a supervisor there. And then during COVID, I was like, time to kind of spread my wings and experience more stuff. And then I came here for a desert keeper, which is also why I needed to be in an area with all kinds of different animals, because I don't really have like a set mammal, reptile, amphibian, whatever. I like them all.
I'm picturing your name tag like a CVS receipt.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like reaching the ground.
Pretty much.
Wow, that's really cool. Yeah. And you had mentioned, I think we ran into each other there at some point.
Yeah. Like when Laura was working there, yeah. I remember, I think I did a lot of otter stuff. I was the main otter trainer when I was there.
Yeah.
And I think you came when we did like the otter experiences and all that good stuff.
Yeah. And I think this was probably after you left after or before the flood, right? The big flood where the whole bottom of the zoo got flooded and they had to move everything?
Or? No, I was still there for that one. I just wasn't there the day it happened. I was safe at my house.
Nice. They brought me in. I was one of, like, they didn't have a lot of volunteers come in because, like, they knew it would be a lot to see and a lot to do. Yeah. But I was one of the people. Michelle reached out and asked me if I could come in. And we had to clean the otter and alligator habitat. And all of the pumps weren't working. So it was literally like I was in that pool all day,
yeah,
and cleaning it out by hand, and it was a journey.
Yes.
Yeah,
journey was a good way to describe that. And I mean, we've had a couple floods, but yeah, that one was definitely the worst.
That was rough.
But got through it. Everybody was
losses.
Fine.
Everyone was great. Yeah, Penny really loved living in a jaguar habitat for a while. Was the
she did
a gator really in a jaguar habitat,
and then we were able to get new pumps and all that good stuff. Good. And like, it was an older system anyway, so it all worked out.
Yeah,
team building, right?
And I was asleep by like 7:30 that night because, man, I don't know how y'all do it.
Coffee,
fair. Yes,
tons of caffeine.
So I'm just going to throw this out into the world as we're interviewing. I do keep this very conversational, as you can see. If you guys like want to ask each other things or have fun with each other too, feel free. Like, I will sit back and not talk again for the rest of the episode, and you can ask each other about your work. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I'm legitimately fine with whatever. So just be aware of that. Like, don't hold back, because that's great. Awesome. Cool. So. That puts you both at the North Carolina Zoo,
yep.
Which is where we are today. And let's get into just kind of some of the animals y'all take care of. And before we were officially recording, although I think I did record this, so I might just steal that audio. But we were talking about the fact that it's kind of funny that even though you're not in the same sections, you do have some animals that are similar but different. And so let's start off with kind of that concept, what we were talking about there.
Yeah. So I work with the lions, which are very big kittens. And Eric works with
the sand cats and the ocelot, which are slightly
very small
smaller
kittens. Slightly,
yes. And I'm curious, do you guys find that they have a lot of, like, is there a lot in common? Because I have a theory that basically all cats are cats.
I mean, yes and no.
Ours are, I mean, the building I work in is our deadliest building, mm-hmm. because it houses chimps and lions.
Oh, yeah, that's
so
a lot.
It's very, also a very loud building. but I want to say they probably, both of their poop probably stinks because all carnivores are pretty smelly.
I mean, my building's pretty quiet except for me. so it's extra quiet when I'm.
And you're also
the
kookaburra.
The kookaburra's a little loud.
Love the kookaburra.
Yeah.
But I feel like smaller cats actually smell worse. Like, they smell more like that cat pee.
Well,
smell,
and ocelots are nothing more than a bag of pee and claws.
Yeah, exactly. they smell like cat pee.
Yeah, and like, they're jungle cats, so their pee has to be strong.
Yeah.
It has to be sticky. It has to literally look like goo on the wall sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, ooh. I've worked with jags and mountain lion.
And
I worked with a lot of other smaller cats like bobcat and obviously the sand cats. And our sand cats stink, but I would say that ocelot probably has one of the strongest feline smells.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've just, like tigers were worse than lions. And I mean, our female's pretty clean. Like, she's a neat lion, but our male, our new male, Haji, he's just spraying everywhere. He's a boy.
Well, yeah, boy, boy cats are definitely grosser than
grossest.
Yeah. I mean, they're not thinking with their brain; they're thinking with else.
So they're humans.
In that regard,
yes. But yes. I feel like if you give a cat a box, like, they're gonna sit in a box.
And I mean, all cats pretty much will enjoy stuff like catnip. It's just all about size. Like, I know with working our jaguars at Elmwood, I remember, like, you could give them the amount of catnip you would a small cat, and they wouldn't really react. Mm-hmm. But then they had those giant claw breaker, the big eight pound compressed. Yes. And it seems like because there was so much more of that, and it was a ball, so that helped. But like we would actually get reactions with them from that versus just plain catnip. Like they're bigger cats, so you need more.
Yeah. 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 I think we tried one of those and Haji broke it into five different pieces.
Oh, yeah. They break them. I mean, luckily they're designed to break.
Yes. But it did not last long. We were hoping it would last a couple times so Makita could get it. But Haji's like, no, this is mine. But we actually have a herb garden for our lions. So we have like mint. We even have like a chocolate mint. We have
that chocolate mint smells. Yeah, because they have some down at the port greenhouses.
Yeah, because cats are so scent-based. But our old lion, Riley, he was a classy fella. He loved Obsession cologne.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yes. He loved Obsession. He also, on the opposite side of that, loved elephant poop.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You said classy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cats. No one's perfect.
Cats also can be the grossest. Yeah. Like, let's be real.
They do like to roll around in poop.
Yeah. And, like, if you give them the right kind of poo, they'll roll around in it, especially hoofstock poo.
If you think about it, like if a lion's out like in the savannah trying to hunt a zebra, it's going to roll in zebra poop. So it smells like zebra and not like a lion. So like it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. But yeah, it's gross. But yeah, they really like a lot of scents. Makita likes mint, like either like extract or the actual plant, and will like grind it up and put the oil over everything. And then Riley liked coffee. He liked the coffee extract because he's an old man. He was an old man.
Our male sand cat, Cosmo, he really likes the artificial, so no animals are harmed getting it, raccoon urine.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, artificial urines, he loves. Oh, he licks it. He's
really
gross. I'm like, oh, buddy. It's his favorite. He's an older boy. And He also definitely is not as much of an enrichment user as a Sahara, but boy, will he go crazy over anything that's covered in fake raccoon urine.
Really? We've tried coyote and we've tried deer and none of our guys like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's because there's no coyotes or deer in Africa.
With bigger cats, I feel like we always had better luck with like furs.
Yeah.
Like having...
We did skin some rabbits and like put it over a boomer ball and froze that. And they liked that.
They really
liked that. But not so much the pee, which I appreciate. I don't have to deal with it then.
You know what I saw at Columbus Zoo? When I was there for AZA conference, which I thought was fascinating.
What?
They took a... So it was an ice block, but it took us forever. All of us are like, oh my gosh, they gave these wolves a whole deer. They're going to be fat. But they didn't. What they did was they took a casting of like a deer chest and gave them the legs only. That way that it's enrichment, but you know, they're not gorging out that they're not going to move for the next 5 days or whatever. But it was a very fast, like it took us forever to realize that it was an ice block. Luckily the keeper was there and told us all it, but yeah, it was pretty fascinating that way they can have that really good enrichment of dealing with a carcass, but you're also not creating really fat animals as well.
My dream is to do more whole prey for all of our carnivores.
Oh, it's super healthy. And I mean, also one thing that works out for us is the fact that like, for example, sand cats eat insects in the wild. So like we have, obviously with our big herb collection, we have a ton of insects, and Sahara, our female favorite enrichment, would keep her active for hours.
That's amazing.
Is if you do a pool or even certain types of puzzle feeders. I've even buried a puzzle feeder in sand and she will dig it out and you can make it as hard as possible. She'll hear the cockroaches scurrying around under all the substrate, under all the leaves, and she will sit there and she'll dig it out. And depending on what it is, she will actually dig out one section and then sit there and wait for a cockroach to come out, and then if she hears it coming towards the entrance, she will leap and shoot her hand in there and try. And like, so
what a good kid.
Oh yeah. Our boy, he's not as bright. When they were in together, she would kind of have to be the one to get them. And then she kind of would get them just to get them sometimes and not always eat them. And then he would then take the cockroach because he's like, I just want to eat.
Yeah.
Even though he has plenty of food.
Yeah. Our male lion isn't that bright. right either, but at least he's cute.
He is cute.
He's very cute.
I mean, that's boy cats.
Yeah, he's, they're just like he said, they don't think with their heads.
No.
Yeah. I think that's true. I mean, I was just down hanging out with your polar bears. And I heard a story about a training that they were working on a new behavior with the male polar bear there. And then breeding season hit. And it completely, I believe I wasn't recording at the time. I was so bummed. But I believe that the keeper said, and I quote, it was like his brain fell out his butt. Like, literally, yeah. The behavior was completely gone. And I'm like, that's fair. We've all been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hormones are a very powerful thing.
And agreed.
I mean, it's...
especially in nature.
Yeah. Like, it's fascinating. I would say that it's actually pretty fascinating to see how different female cats will react to heat. Because, like, I've had some where you could kind of tell a little bit. But I've also worked with, once again, at Elmwood, where the Jaguar, like, it was like, boom. You could see it in her eyes rolling. Like, it looked like she was on something.
Yes.
Like, while other ones are like, might show it. Although I will say our female sand cat, she sometimes showed heat. Other times she didn't. When the first time she showed heat, it was intense. She would not leave our male alone. And she would be, like, right on him. It got so, like, she needed to be with him so bad that he was trying to sleep. And this was back when they were in nocturnal and there was kind of that upper shelf area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She slept on top of him. Normally they're on the opposite sides for sleeping, but she had to be on top. Oh, yeah. You could see he was like, get her away. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to, but she won't stop. She wants it too bad.
Poor gosh. He was probably exhausted.
I know. He's like, I've wanted this for years. He's like, I wanted a female that wanted me this bad for years, but this is a little too much.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, buddy.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing. That is really funny. Oh my gosh. So we're talking about cats right now, and we're talking about the lions. And I love the kind of insight that you've given into them already. I'm really curious about something though.
Yeah.
You know what smells they love.
Yeah.
And you know what smells they don't like, but have you ever had like a true like averse reaction? Not like a medically averse, but just like a like, I don't know what this is, but get it out of here kind of thing.
Makita does not like trout.
Okay.
So we do some like food enrichment to kind of switch things up. She does like salmon. She's fancy.
That's so funny. Yeah, like, I don't think of those as being that different.
Yeah.
But
no, she did not like trout.
Well, the salmon is like definitely a fattier fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, she didn't like trout. She does not like rats, but she'll eat guinea pigs.
Interesting.
I don't know if it's the tail. I don't know.
Well, does she leave behind a piece? Because I remember some cats that would get so picky that it was like, I don't like this stuff.
Well, for guinea pigs, not really. Rabbits, though, yes. So we do have a rabbit day once a week, and they usually leave whatever is in the rabbit's bowels. And then they sometimes will leave the guts.
Yeah.
Yeah, Riley would usually... he was the pickiest lion or cat I have ever met in my life, but he would only eat the heads.
Well, that's crunchy.
Bodies, exactly.
It's crunchy.
But
it's all the brain power in there.
As far as like averse. Yeah, I would say trout's the biggest thing probably for her, but nothing really that made her like, I don't want anything to do with that, but probably trout. But what's really cute is when she does find a smell she likes and they do the phlegm response and they do that stinky face. I love that. I love that face.
Yeah, no, it's a good face. That's really cool. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so you're in a building with lions and chimps.
Yes.
That's a lot.
It's very loud.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Our occupational health requires us to get hearing tests.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. So tell me about the chimps that are here.
So we have 17 chimps total, but we do have two separate groups.
Okay.
One of our groups I call our more behaviorally normal groups, and that is the group we call John's group. So J-O-N.
Johns are always the most behaviorally normal, question mark. Anyway, go ahead.
And is it actually not in this case. But
and is it behaviorally normal based on humans or based on chimps?
Based on chimps.
Okay. So the most chimpy group.
The more chimpy group than the other group. The other group, instead of Island of Misfit Toys, I call them our troop of misfit chimps. They all kind of have a bit of a special backstory. So we have a former entertainment chimp who had never even seen another chimp until he came here when he was 8.
Wow.
Yeah, he was forced to wear human clothes. It was just a real bad situation. Luckily, they didn't pull his teeth, thank goodness. And we also have a former lab chimp in that group. Our old lady's also in that group. She'll be 53 in January. So, yeah, he's kind of in a group with kind of a bunch of weirdos and old ladies. But he's kind of the reason, he's the main reason we have two groups. He can't be with our other big boys. Just because he had no idea how to interact as a chimp when he
doesn't
here.
Know how to chimp.
He doesn't. He's learned, but he's still not what I would call 100% fluent, yeah. I would say. But yes, we did have two new babies born this year.
Nice.
First time moms, so we're very proud of moms. They're doing very well. It's interesting to see, because both moms are in this two separate groups, how they're mothering differently. So one of them's a bit more confident. She's like, she'll put the baby on the ground, like, please learn to crawl now. Like, I'm tired of carrying you. And the other mom's like, oh, he touched the ground. He's not allowed to touch the ground.
Is that from Misfit Mom?
I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Well, you said there's two.
Oh,
groups.
Yeah,
there's
the I'm John sorry. Group and the Misfit. Yes. Yeah. That mom is in Misfit Mom.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I was like, that sounds like Misfit.
Yeah, sorry.
Group.
I was like, is that some like in a movie? I don't know what that is. I'm
You're
sorry.
The one who came in.
I know. I'm sorry. I can't keep up. Yes. Yes. Overprotective helicopter mom is in Misfit Group.
Oh, well.
Yeah. And we have another mom in there. Her kid will be 4 in November. And that mom is also a helicopter mom. And chimps learned so much by watching. And so Gigi has learned from Amy, like, I'm going to be very, very careful with this baby. But we'll see. We'll see.
Interesting.
Yes. They're amazing. They're so smart. I love them.
Are they your favorite thing to work with?
You can't say that. I don't have a favorite species. I have favorite individuals.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, so Jonathan's in my top three. He's one of my favorites. He's probably, I think, our smartest chimp that we have. He was hand-reared for the first couple of years of his life. He was born at Yerkes, which is a behavioral research facility down in Georgia, or was, and his mother tried to attack him. And so we were already hand-rearing a female up here that whose mother was not mothering at all. And so we
it
took
happens.
On John. Exactly. Yeah. We took on John at the same time. And he just turned, he'll be 27 this year, but he's so smart. I feel like sometimes he trains us. So in our holding space, we get a lot of frogs because it's real humid. Mm-hmm. And so me and the keeper, other keepers will try to catch the frogs because we don't want the chimps to get them. Because it's usually not good when the chimps get a hold of something else that's alive.
Yeah.
It doesn't end well.
This toy moves.
Exactly. This is fun. Squish, squish, squish. Let's rip it apart.
Chimps.
So,
yeah. I mean, yeah, this tracks.
Yeah. I know.
They're just interested. They're trying
exactly.
to learn.
They're learning.
Yeah,
they're
we've all dissected, you know, frogs at some point in our lives.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, they're evolving. So Jonathan started catching the frogs and alerting us that he has them. He's like, well, I can do this too. He's like, so you guys, I have a frog. And then we're like, okay, can we have it? He's like, what are you going to give me for it? So, yeah.
He's a frog bounty hunter.
He is, yes. He will go and catch the frogs, give them to us. And he doesn't kill them. They're
alive. That's amazing.
They just look terrified.
Yes.
They're just like, oh. But, yes. So I'm like, can you make sure the other chimps learn this so they don't kill them?
That's really cool.
Yes.
Like the idea of understanding, you know, I mean, I'm anthropomorphizing, but basic economics a little bit. I mean, like at the most basic level, that's what that is.
Exactly.
It's trading.
Yeah,
trading behavior.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so smart.
That's awesome. What kind of enrichment stuff do you do, you know, beyond occasionally missing a frog to make sure that your chimps are engaged?
Well, because they're great apes, so we do a minimum of 2 enrichments a day. So we will sometimes provide different nesting materials. We always try to give them some type of fabric every other day, whether that's towels, socks, clothing. We have a bunch of miscellaneous fabrics. We'll even give them like dog beds, and because different individuals, like some will prefer to nest in like straw or hay or shavings, and some will prefer a cloth or a fabric. And some of them will combine it. So they make this beautiful nest, and then they'll fluff out a blanket right over it. They're like, yes, this is the best nest ever. We do like to give them, because chimps are known to be a little aggressive, we do give them a bunch of different stuff to throw around and display with.
I like that we started with rip frogs limb from limb, uh-huh, and then went to chimps are little aggressive.
Someone somewhere has said that they're aggressive.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from.
So we gave them beating sticks so that they can have something to...
Well, I'd rather them display and throw a toy than display and throw another chimp.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of like the lesser of two evils.
It's kind of like toddlers. If you don't give them anything, they're still going to find something.
Exactly.
They're creative.
Yeah, so a bunch of it is like a bunch of different types of plastics. We'll like go to Goodwill and get like old plastic toys that they can have and disinfect them and give it to them. We'll do boots and shoes. Some of them really like socks. They'll actually put socks like on their hands or their feet sometimes.
A little puppet show.
Yeah, a little bit. Uh-huh. And then we'll have like brushes and stuff. So Ruby in particular, she'll brush her beard. And then I love giving them like feeding or like food enrichment. They just get super excited. Jonathan in particular, because he's the alpha of that behaviorally normal group. He is a hoarder and he does not share. So one of my favorite videos, and I got it on video, I have to show you, but we were doing, I think Easter one year, we had paper mache, like eggs, and we let all the chimps, or not all the chimps, but Jonathan's group out where there's like 10 of them. And you just see Jonathan running by with like bipedally. So like us on 2 feet with 5 or 6 eggs. And I'm like, do you really need all of them? He says, yes, absolutely.
I mean, once again, like a toddler who steals all the eggs from all the other kids.
I feel like my job is partially babysitting.
Let's learn to share.
No, you can't learn. You can't teach that. No.
There's a hierarchy for a reason.
For a reason, exactly. But we do give them a bunch of types of feeders. So we give them sticks and stuff so they can problem solve. And it's usually when they're quiet, though, that for too long, we get a little nervous. So, like, we'll go check on them on habitat. We're like, no one screamed lately. Are they plotting? I think we should go check on them.
That's really funny. I am curious. You know, you mentioned the hierarchy, and that is a built-in social structure that they have. And you cannot train that away. Not that you would want to, but I mean, as a keeper, you might want to, but we shouldn't.
Yes.
But what effect does that have on enrichment and making sure that the least amongst the troop, you know, still gets to be enriched?
So some of it's kind of hard. So like if it is food enrichment that we're scattering in their behind the scenes area or something, it is usually the most dominant ones who do get that. So a lot of times we will save some back to make sure, like if it's sugar-free Jell-O or peanut butter, like we'll like spoonful those certain individuals. So we know that they're still getting good things. But for Jonathan, for some enrichment, so we have like stuffed PVC tubes, and for some reason that causes him to throw an absolute tantrum where he just gets so mad if Sakota, who's a lesser dominant male, or was at that point, there's been a lot of drama and power plays currently. It's so much fun. Lots of wounds.
It's like a political system.
It is. I say it's like Game of Thrones. It's a soap opera every day. There's blood, there's brown chicken, brown cow, and there's power moves. Like
all they need is some Komodo dragons in there, and
who would be the queen of the dragons? The queen of dragons, the mother of dragons. But I've never thought of that before.
That's amazing.
We're getting Asia soon.
give them a bearded dragon, just like the little one. But
that would go as well as the frog. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Komodo dragon has a chance.
We need a bigger mesh space for them to train the bearded dragon. But so for Jonathan, we found out for the PVC tubes that we actually had to station him and promise him 2 while we exactly like handed out everyone else 1. So we had to station him, show him like, look, you stay with me, you get 2. And he's like, okay. Else can get 1 because I'm going to get 2. But yeah, or even if there's like, he's just so smart, I can't even handle it. But like, even if there's like their favorite food, like it's pepper week. So, you know, we have a rotating diet. They never get the same thing every single week. We usually have one item that rotates. But if it's pepper week or tomato week, if there's like some of their enrichment is plastic or like a bucket or something, Jonathan will take that bucket and put all the peppers and collect all of them. He's like, this is what I want. But yeah, hierarchy, it does kind of suck for the lower ranking ones, but you know, that's just kind of a part of it, as you say. So we try to arrange it to where we spread everything out as best we can. We'll even hide stuff under straw, or, you know, we just try to spread it out as much as we can to give everyone else a fighting chance.
I mean, that's what's happening in the wild. And like, that's why yeah. the alpha is always so much bigger. He's getting yeah. the best bits.
He has the best stuff. And Jonathan really only appreciates being alpha for the food privileges. He does not like the other responsibility.
Like breeding?
Yeah, he's not interested. He's a behavioral non-breeder.
He's like, I just want the food. You can have the ladies.
Exactly. He's like, I could give a fig for them.
Trading out ladies for peppers.
Yes, yes. He would much prefer that, actually. Yeah.
And I feel like that, I mean, it brings up a good point with, like, the higher level of apes. Because, like, for so many of our animals, especially animals that aren't social, like for sand cats, like, the easiest way to keep them from not hating each other in captivity is the fact that we can provide them with so much food, and also that we can separate them so everybody can get an equal amount of food. Mm-hmm. But that just can't work with some of these higher primates, because mm-hmm. they're so socially bonded that you would actually probably cause an all-out war if you separated exactly. them, because they know that they're getting it. Like, you have to have that, or else it actually gets worse. Whereas yep. a lot of our other animals, I mean, granted, I work with like the little mouse lemurs. You could separate mm-hmm. them out. They don't, even though they might have a hierarchy, it's not like they're like,
they're oh, so tiny.
Yeah, they're so tiny. And they're just like, oh, look, you're there again. Okay, you probably ate, but I'm cool with that. But like something that is so like baboons and chimps yes. and all that separation, changing smells. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you gotta be very careful with like that kind of stuff, with vet procedures
yes.
and all
and
that.
Well, I feel like baboons are even more vicious about that kind of stuff and mm-hmm. about hierarchy, because they have their social structure so different. They have one male units where it's one male and his girlfriends. And then you have these one male units who make up like clans and then bands and then a troop. And you have male young males who will come in and try to steal females. And it's just, it's more chaotic than the chimps. I love the baboons so much.
Which is probably the funniest thing I remember from like Planet Earth, where they had like an all-out brawl of two baboon troops going at it. And that, like, yeah, there's some fighting, but also there's some subdominant males that their only goal is grabbing females and dragging them back to their side, almost as if when they're someone yeah. like a referee comes in and blows the whistle, and whatever side you're on is your new team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like
whatever male you're with, that's your new male.
Yeah. Like if he can drag you away and the time is over, then you're stuck with that group.
It's yeah.
Yeah.
Baboons is, I think baboons. I interned with baboons before I worked with chimps, and I think that kind of set me up for kind of understanding chimps yeah. a little bit, just like with the chaos and with the hierarchy as well.
You know, that's always a fun fact, I feel like, from the chimp thing, because I feel like it goes against what everyone says is, where do you look at a chimp? Mm. Because I feel like everyone thinks it's the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
It is. Yeah. I just gave a keeper talk for World Gorilla Day yesterday and talked about this yesterday. So chimps actually like eye contact. Okay. It is a very positive thing for them. So with Kendall, our ex-entertainment chimp, like I can always tell when he's mad at me, because he will look anywhere but me. And I like try to meet his gaze. And he's like, no. I'm so upset with you. Absolutely not.
You cannot look at these eyes.
No, nope, you will not see into my soul. Absolutely not. Whereas gorillas and baboons, they see that as a threat. A lot of primates actually see it as a threat. Except for most of our silverback, he was also reared. He's a little weird.
I worked with a lot of New World primates, and it's like the complete opposite. You can look at them, they'll smile at you, and that doesn't mean anything.
Right. Like, yeah.
Worked with Mojo, this male howler monkey, and he would smile at you, mm-hmm. and he would it was meant as a happy to see you, but I mean,
mandrills
even a
will smile too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, a lot of old world, it's, you see, and baboons, if they yawn, that's seen as a threat, or they'll raise their eyebrows and threaten you, and sometimes you just have to threaten them back. I mean, I don't say visitors do that, but if you work with them,
you understand.
Well, yeah, you have to get to know them and you interact with them.
Exactly. I mean, if a visitor does it and they have an opportunity, something's getting chucked at their face. Exactly. I've seen that at other facilities where someone does the wrong motion to a baboon and they throw.
Yeah.
I mean, even with gorillas.
Yeah. We do have a gorilla who's bottom man. He's low. Low dominance. So he's at the bottom of all that list of the hierarchy. And he can't display it any of the other gorillas. So the only thing he can take it out on are visitors. So I tell people, I'm like, don't take it personally. He's just trying to be tough. We just ask, don't hit the glass. Don't beat your chest. Don't look at him. And same with Kendall. Kendall will display at the glass. A lot of the other chimps don't really display at the people, but Kendall does because just
Kendall.
I can't. We say he has an alter ego. So yesterday,
like Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah. So it's Kendall and Kendall.
Oh, Kendall.
Kendall. You don't want to see Kendall.
Oh. Is he Ken enough?
He's Ken enough.
He's Ken enough.
That's hilarious. Cool. So we've spent a lot of time on your section.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
And I love it.
Let's keep talking about the fancy chimps.
About the primates.
But let's chat. Let's chat desert a bit. So you already mentioned mouse lemurs,
yes.
Which you just don't get to see them very often. I'm very excited that those exist in this world.
Yeah.
What else? What else do you have?
It's a big list.
I have a lot.
So, okay.
Tell me some of the more charismatic, energetic things that you like to talk about.
All right. Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of mammals, the mammal routine, it's all easy to list off. We got a whole colony of vampire bats.
Freaking bats. I love the freaking bats.
They're always pumping out little babies, and they're always fun.
They're like just little goblins, and they're just creeping around. I love them.
I love those guys. And I mean, so it's cool with them because it's the only species of bat in the entire world that would drink mammal blood. Mm-hmm. And they're only found in Central South America. But yes, and they don't drink our blood. I can go in there. They stay far away. Yes. They don't want anything to do with me. So they're cool.
That's what they want you to think.
It's only because you work during the day.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't go in there
at night. Nocturnal section. It's night then. And then we got our mouse lemurs, and there's a Tenrex that lives in with them.
Nice.
And he is that whole habitat. You wouldn't think it, but they're probably the boldest, some of the boldest animals we have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mouse lemurs. The smallest primate I've ever worked with, and they are right in your face. They might hide from guests because they're sleepy and they like to sleep in their little tubes even when it's nighttime. But when we're in there, they're right in our face and they're like, snacks, now human. And that's how this Tenrex is too. We'll go in there and you got to watch where you're going because there's little mouse lemurs above you and it's a smaller habitat and there's a Tenrex running around. And I remember that we were getting the mouse lemurs ready for a vet procedure. So I'm kneeling on the ground and getting them in separate kennels so that they can go out. And here's the Tenrex climbing my leg. I'm buddy, I'm busy. He's like, excuse me, it's worm day. Where's my worms? Where's my worms? And he's like, put them over there. Scurry, scurry, scurry. Put them over there. Scurry, scurry, scurry. Keeps climbing up my leg.
Also, the next time you go into that habitat, I want to come and see mouse lemurs demanding food from you.
Oh, yeah. They're very demanding. Cedar is probably our most demanding. He's just, where's my snacks? And then next to them, we have our brush-tailed bittongs, which are a newer animal that we have here. And I think it was probably a week or so ago that we announced that we actually have a joey.
Oh, nice.
And he's out of the pouch already. He's out there he's out and about now with mom. They're critically endangered. How I describe it to people, what a bittong is, because a lot of people don't know, is basically imagine a really tiny kangaroo that comes out at night. And likes mushrooms.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, out in the wild, they are some classy little animals. They love truffles.
Nice.
Good for them.
But they're critically endangered, super important for the environment. They move tons of soil. They aerate. They spread mushroom spores and seeds and all that. And they're kind of like the gardeners of Australia. And because they're so endangered, it's really affecting their habitat out there with the loss of them.
Is it just like construction or development that's causing?
Oh, cats.
Freaking cats.
I talk about this all the time.
Yeah,
domesticated cats, besides humans, may be the biggest devastator to our planet.
Dang.
Except for us. And it's because of us, obviously.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
They wipe out island animals all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
They spread disease. And that's the big thing is like most of the world, they're just murdering millions and billions. And even if you let your cat outside for like an hour, they've done tons of studies where they put GPS trackers on them.
Yeah.
And they go so far away and people swear up and down they never eat anything. But scientists literally track these cats from people that they say they're devastating wild populations of multiple different types of animals. And actually, they more likely eat native healthy birds and things like that than actually invasive mice or anything like that. Like they're causing way more harm than they ever do good.
Yeah.
But in Australia, it's extra worse because a lot of cats have something called toxoplasmosis.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't really affect the cats because that parasite does really well in cat stomachs.
Mm-hmm.
But when it goes outside a cat, because like when a cat poops, that's how it spreads, it actually can mess with the brain of an animal. And they've even done studies in Yellowstone where wolves that get it from wild, like mountain lions, actually are considered braver. Because the idea is the parasite makes them braver. And a lot of times it would be like mice. Mice would get braver and then are dumber and get eaten by cats more. It's an idea of making them dumber to die to possibly get inside a cat's stomach a lot easier. But this is for all what we call placental mammals.
Yeah.
Marsupials, because they've been separated from the world so much, certain diseases are just devastating to them. And toxoplasmosis is actually extremely deadly. So with our brush-tailed bittong, it's like bag sand. We have this whole quarantine thing. Even though our cats don't have toxoplasmosis, we treat it like they do because it is such a white devastator. A lot of zoos that do have marsupials outside, like great kangaroo and all that, all have cat plants. Because if one cat comes in there and takes a crap in that yard, it could be a huge devastator.
Wow.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that, because at the science center when they still had their wallaby walkthrough, if you worked tiger that day, you could not do wallaby.
Yeah, and once again, it's not like they're getting regular checkups and all that sort of stuff, and the chances of them having toxoplasmosis is slim. But if it just happens to get in them somehow, don't take the risk.
It affects lemurs real bad too. Because I've known at some zoos that it's just
all those little island animals that have been separated from the world.
Yep. Did you know that Australia is currently proposing a complete ban on outdoor cats?
Really?
Or if they can't get that to pass, a cat curfew.
Yeah.
I literally, as we're recording this in September, my Zoo News episode from Friday was called the Cat Curfew Edition, because I was like, this is brand new. This just made the news last week. They're considering this.
Wow.
Yeah. Because it's devastating to the environment. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the probably leaders on that is New Zealand. They're they're doing calls.
Because they have
the kakapo and the kiwis.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's actually the nation itself is starting to rally, like the actual people. So they apparently started doing a lot of those tracking and stuff of like rats. Like the New Zealanders. Yeah.
Kiwis. They go by kiwis normally.
Yeah. I was like, wait, is that an offensive term?
No, I have a friend who's from New Zealand. They are very much kiwis. Okay. That is,
Where they were going out and doing a lot of this like citizen science stuff, which is amazing. Citizen science is really, I think, helping educate the public on a lot of this stuff, because they were going out, they were setting traps, they were having trap cameras, and they were watching all of these, like the ferrets, the rats, the possums, all these things that were introduced that were devastating their land. But then it was hard for them to ignore the fact that they kept seeing cats coming up and cats devastating. So I think because all of these people were obviously all about getting rid of invasive rats because that's an easier one to sell. But then during the science realized, oh, rats aren't really as bad as some of these cats or rabbits. I know rabbits are a big one down there too.
No.
And it's actually changing how people view it. A cat, you know.
It's really interesting.
That, and even past just cats being in households. Like people are like, well, we could have a cat in a household, but we're so turned off of cats for what they're doing to the environment. People that have been generational cat people having cats for years, they're like, this is my last cat ever. I know I could keep it inside and do the catios and all that. And a lot of people that have started doing it, there's people that are getting kiwi nest in their backyards and all of a sudden they're like, it is amazing just getting rid of a cat that goes outside, the difference.
Wow. That's awesome.
Because even if they're not killing animals, they're spreading diseases, you know?
Yeah.
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 But anyway, so they brush tail baton. I always have to give my little spiel
yes.
on that.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know. So thank you for enlightening me.
My other mammals I work with, of course, we have the sand cats. We have the male, the female, and of course, the three kittens.
The babes.
Yeah.
The babies. We have two older ocelot as well. And then outside of mammals, we have kookaburras. We have a burrowing owl. We got weavers. We have the crested kua. She's a gem.
Yeah.
I love her with her little mohawk feathers. But yeah, we got two species of weavers, which are really cool, where they'll like literally weave grass nests. Like the Tibetan golden weavers that are actually out free flight in our dome. They're known in Africa to actually build mega complexes where instead of individual nests, it's one major nest and the pairs get apartment rooms, so to speak, in it.
That's cool.
So they're really cool and really social. And then just piles of reptiles, of course.
Yes, y'all got a lot.
We got a lot of cool reptiles. We have like the African open top that has pancake tortoises, giant plated lizards, Gorgosa girdle lizards, which also fun thing. Part of the scientific name of the Gorgosa girdle lizard is that it is called Smaug from Lord of the Rings. Yeah,
that's my tattoo. Nice.
Yeah, they actually have
that's the Hobbit's one of my faves.
The genus. So
that's
like the kind of like that those groups. So they're related to like the that armadillo lizard that will roll up that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess recently they discovered that like the Gorgosa girdle lizards and a number of others actually don't really fit in with the others. So it's kind of a newer genus. And they went with Smaug because they kind of look like him
that's a little bit.
So
that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Which also, yeah, I looked up a lot where I'm like, I know a lot of people say Smaug, but it's Smaug, you know, or Smaug and Smaug.
Yeah.
Smaug is a different problem.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And then, of course, we have Sonoran open top with desert tortoises, chuckwallas. Australia has blue-tongued skink, spiny-tailed monitors. Got Colorado river toads.
Oh, they're so fat and cute.
We've even had some babies from them, which are just... they're really cool. And we got some venomous rattlesnakes, some sidewinders, which also, fun fact, they don't sidewind in captivity because we don't leave the sand 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
So they don't need to.
Yeah.
That's something I never would have thought of.
Sidewinding is just tiptoes for a snake.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah,
it's
so
just something I never
It's used touching the sand with the least amount of their body.
Yeah.
So because we don't like, you know, as we always tell people, just because an animal can survive, it doesn't mean it wants to survive.
Right.
There's some things like we have to keep the sand cats inside because the humidity here would actually affect their lungs because it's too humid here because they're so built for the desert.
Yeah.
But then other animals
sense.
Where it's like, okay, we got to keep them dry, but we don't have to keep it 120 degrees Fahrenheit in there.
Yeah.
We can survive without clothes outside in 32 degrees Fahrenheit, but doesn't mean we're going to like it.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't mean we should.
Doesn't mean we should. It doesn't mean we're going to like it or that it won't feel very painful. But yeah.
Y'all even got some insects in there too, right?
Yeah, we got the blue death fang beetles or the walking blueberries. they're really cool. So they're like, these little beetles that live out in like the United States deserts, and they actually technically are black, but they secrete this bluish substance out of them that protects them from the sun. So they look blue. Like if you accidentally miss them or spray them, they'll turn black again. But it's basically they have built-in sunscreen that comes out of them, and it's blue. They also will fake their own death. So they play possum.
Amazing.
So, and it's, well, it's because their number one predator out there are tarantulas and other spiders. And when they really don't like eating dead things, like they like the movement and all that. So to protect them from that, they'll actually fake their own death. And in fact, the larva itself will fake its own death as well.
Oh, yeah. So interesting. So, I'm learning so much.
So if you find a beetle and it and you go in there and all of a sudden it looks like it's dead on you, sometimes just put it out in the open and then like let it be for a little bit and see if it gets up, because they're very good at it.
Hey. That's really cool. That sounds like quite the habitat.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's so many animals.
Yeah, it's a cool habitat because like so the ocelot are kind of in like their own little annex area as you're first approaching, but then you actually go into a glass dome, and it's an older dome now. I think it was 1992 or something like that when it opened. Like it's over 20 years old, I think. But it's this big glass dome. You walk in, there's free flight birds. There's some birds or some reptiles that are obviously in some bigger habitats within it that if they got out would murder everybody. Like if the kookaburra got out, we wouldn't have any free flight birds and we would have a lot of lizards missing. She's like the Indominus Rex of that building of birds. But then we have some open tops where it's just kind of, it looks like you come across like a little valley or outcropping of rocks where there's a bunch of reptiles. And then of course we have habitats built within the rock work as well. So it really feels like you're kind of walking through this desert and seeing all these different desert animals from around the world. And then you walk into a nocturnal section as you're leaving where we have a lot of our nocturnal animals at.
Very cool. All right. Well, this has been amazing. I've learned so much stuff.
We could keep going.
I was going to say.
That's why they chose us.
You two should have been two separate full-hour interviews, but that's a different conversation. But so I'd like to hit up, though, the last couple questions, always conservation organizations. I'd like to give a shout-out to.
Mine is probably Gorillas on the Line. So it's just recycling any old cell phones. There's a mineral in all of your phones, and small technologies called Coltan. And what that is it, from my understanding, it prevents a lot of our devices from overheating. But fortunately it's found in mind in gorilla and actually chimpanzee natural habitat. So an easy way to help is just recycling a lot of your old technology and old cell phones. We work with EcoCell, and so they recycle every part of that phone that they can, including that mineral. And so that way there's not a need to mine for more. And then what little they don't recycle, they actually sell. And that goes straight to like the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund International and the Jane Goodall Institute. So goes straight to on-site conservation efforts in Africa. So that's one of my big ones that I like to plug for people, because everyone has an old phone in an underwear or sock drawer. Almost every, and then you have like five of the iPhone boxes that you don't even need anymore. Yeah, just recycle your old phones.
Nice, very good.
Keep your cats inside.
Yeah,
honestly, I feel like that's a big one.
Yeah, it's not an exact organization,
I'm with you on that. I mean, like, that's the same for me.
All right, here's one. If you can't give money, just keep your cats inside.
I love that. Honestly,
it's sometimes the little things.
It really is.
I mean,
yep, absolutely. Very cool. And now it is time.
It's time now, don't you know? We've come to the end of the show. But there's one tale left to go. You're gonna laugh and say, oh no. It's time for the Rastafari Poop Story.
Let's see. Poop didn't actually get on me, which was nice, but I was throwing this really heavy bag of tiger poop into a dumpster, and I was kind of like winding up to throw it in. But
sounds like you deserve this.
I did. I did not do things smart. It was real dumb. And I was winding up to throw it in there, and first of all, my aim is horrible. Second of all, it missed the top of the dumpster and just exploded against the side of the dumpster. There's just... tiger just
like a Jackson Pollock painting.
It wasn't good. I was like, so this was at the Science Center, and so we had had different codes for different things. So I called my friend in the aquarium. I was like, I have a code brown at the dumpster. Can you bring a bucket of water?
Sounds like you had the code.
I know. Yeah. I was like, and
it's
then,
like, how can I make this not sound like I'm
exactly? Like, and then I'm like, I just announced that on the radio. Way to go, you buffoon.
These codes. No one will ever figure out the master code.
Yeah, right.
Code.
They won't know a code.
Amazing.
People just say that.
Right. And then I did have one. One of my coworkers did get pooped on from a chimpanzee, and it just fell all down her shirt.
Oh.
So. Yeah, that one. Luckily, that hasn't happened to me. Knock on wood.
Mm. I'm glad you did two, because like I kind of had two. Yeah, one was poop and one wasn't poop. Both actually weren't me. Like in terms of poop, I feel like I recover well from it. I get peed and pooped on by vampires all the time.
Penguins, that was me.
Yeah, I did it with like sun kindness when I was working with the interactive bird thing, and people would watch it happen. I'm like, how do you think I keep my hair so good? So like I've never had like too disgusting of a story, but I had had to, like, two other people that I've witnessed slash had to help. One was I was with a newer keeper to our facility, and we were doing stuff with howler monkeys. And our one female howler monkey, if she thinks that she's, like, going to a vet procedure or something like that, a lot of times likes to go to the top of her habitat and just have
stress poop
everywhere.
Oh, primate stress poop's the worst.
I kind of looked away for a little bit, but then I realized that the keeper was underneath looking straight up.
No!
It happened, and it rained down onto her face, straight face. Luckily, she had glasses on, but it was like, I mean, you know, they're prescription glasses, so they didn't protect her that much. And I had to hose her face off. I think she almost went home, but she championed through.
Extra credit for her, because I would have gone home and bleached my face. And then made an appointment at the doctor. I was like, can you do an internal parasite screen?
And like, killer monkeys are not small monkeys.
No.
There was a lot of slopping noises I heard. And it looked like she got slimed at Nickelodeon, but it was brown. It was very gross. And then the other incident that wasn't poop related was another keeper I worked with, and there was like this just pond.
Yeah,
it wasn't anything fancy. Like there was like some koi or something in there, and he was cleaning out like the spillway where like if dead fish were to die, they'd end up there and all that. So he was cleaning it out. In a bag that wasn't that strong, one of the thinner bags. And I think he was doing something similar to what you were doing,
but
he was spinning it and it broke and the nasty dead fish water got into his mouth.
Oh.
And I think there were some chunks of fish and he puked.
No, No, I don't mess with fish.
Especially rotting dead fish.
Rotting dead fish are the worst
kind. Any kind of fish.
Yeah.
No.
And there was probably some poop in there, too, because, like, you know.
Yeah. No, I got pooped. I mean, raising baby penguins, you get pooped on a lot because you're just holding them. I have slipped and fallen in poop. That was my very first day on internship here at the zoo.
I don't think I've ever gotten, like.
Slipped and fell.
Like, nailed with some nasty poop. Like, I mean, obviously, vampire bat is gross because it's, like, but it's little.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
Yeah. It's not, like. I mean, and I've watched keepers where, like, I saw an, it wasn't here, but I saw an ocelot climb a fence and literally at the top of the fence shoot pee onto someone from across the room.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've seen it with monkeys too, but not me. I've lucked out.
Our young chimps, especially our young males, it just goes everywhere.
Yeah.
And they'll aim.
I had
a they'll, like, aim through the mesh. I'm like, can you not, sir?
I think my scariest moment with that that wasn't poop was just like a golden eagle accidentally landed on my back.
Oh.
And all I thought was, please, because she was flat-footed on my back.
Oh.
So she was like in quarantine and I was like scrubbing it. And she like landed on my back and she was not the brightest. And I was just like, if I move, if she
those
grips,
claws,
like, because it was like right in my shoulder blade.
Oof.
I was like, that could do some puncturing. Because, like, something somewhere else spooked her and she just landed on me versus the perch. And I kind of did this like little shuffle to the perch. And luckily, she didn't realize it and get off because I didn't want to make any sudden movements.
Right.
No. Now, I was going to say, now, if you're talking scars, I have.
Yeah.
It's all birds. So. Yeah. Freaking penguins. I love working with them, but God.
That's demons. Really funny.
I've had bobcat.
I've had tamandua.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Cam's will get you.
Yeah. I got a tamandua in between my fingers.
Ooh.
She clawed me.
You know, I haven't had the experience with it, but I know a lot of people sloth. You got to watch out for them.
No, I've been very careful because, one, they have a nasty bite. Their mouths are disgusting, and they're strong.
And they can move quick when they're jerked.
Exactly when they want to.
Yeah. They have an innocent face, but they're like the secret jerks of a lot of zoos.
I can see that.
There's some zoos that will hear this, and they're like, our sloths are the best. What are you talking about? But there's some real jerk sloths out
there. Those
are
the exceptions.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, my only animal scar that I've gotten doing all this is red panda. So, you never know. Yeah.
Was it Slash?
Yeah, no. No, although I love Slash.
Yeah.
Slash is amazing. He's a good boy. Yeah. But Slash and I get along. I'm one of the few guys that he'll get along with.
Slash and me.
Was it Ravi?
No. Although Ravi tried. I don't like to say where just because I don't want to cause trouble for anyone. It was not them. Yeah. But it was a mom.
Made me bleed my own blood.
It was a mom who I was feeding mom and cubs, and she did not like that the cubs were getting food. Mm-hmm. And so used a claw to pull the food back by pulling my hand back. Yeah, it happens. Mm-hmm.
Were you ever there for Clinger and Shredder as well?
No, but I know they exist.
Clinger was the most sociable.
Okay.
He was one where, same sort of story, I was working the habitat and something spooked him. That panda saw that his best choice was he was going to climb me like a tree and sit on my shoulder like a parrot until he felt safe again. He didn't cause a scratch or anything. Mm-hmm. He was a
good boy.
Yeah. I mean, I love pandas, but I'll be the first to say that they are lemons sometimes. they're special creatures.
Yeah. Well, and especially
and super
working.
Vicious. When they want to be.
Yeah. But also working with Slash. That's the he's the ultimate special boy at this point.
He's a good boy.
Yeah, he's a good boy. But
his father,
special.
Man, he has that lineage of being what a difference from him and his dad, though, because you know that it's Rusty, mm-hmm. the escape panda.
Yep.
I'm sure I'm sure.
I'm that guy. Yeah.
You know the entire family tree of every panda in the zoos.
I know more than I wish to admit. Yes. But anyway, this has been a blast. Thank you all very much.
Thank you so much for having us and letting us yap your ear off.
Really, you just had a recorder for me and Sarah to talk about what's new.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. I really do appreciate it.
Of course. Anytime. Yeah. Thanks. Are you guys ready?
Oh.
You guys laughing. So there's Mama with her new baby.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
Y'all are cute. John? There you go, baby boy.
Oh, this is...
Nice to the baby.
This is very cool.
Yes, this is our newer feeding platform.
I like it.
Hey, Sakoto boy. So these two down here are breeding males. That's Sakoto and Lance.
Okay.
That's him blowing those raspberries.
Nice. Classic. Classic.
Yeah, we're currently having some drama with those two boys. They're trying to figure out their spot in the hierarchy.
Gotcha.
Lance is our largest at 160-some pounds, but he's broken his right middle finger a few too many times.
Oh.
So it permanently sticks up, but don't take it personally.
Actually, sounds like that might be the perfect. Right? Yeah, that's good.
Most of the time, he doesn't mean it.
So I noticed this one is chilling over here
alone.
So is this a dominance thing?
Yes. Ebby's extremely low ranking. Honey, I'll try. Just hang on, Ebbs.
And also, how old is this one? Who is this? This little juvenile, the small one. There is one that is smaller than the rest except for the baby. Okay. How old is Obi?
He will be 4 in March.
Whew. Okay.
Yeah. So he's just under 50 pounds.
Wow.
You did it, Sakoto. You tell us.
Oh my gosh, the one just reached up.
Oh yes, and we have some of them who will even clap.
Wow.
So they're just Peanuts, please.
That's amazing.
Give me my food.
And so is this just an enrichment thing? Is this like a part of their meal, like diet? You know what I mean?
I am giving them an extra treat.
Oh. So
I am spoiling them a little bit.
Is this the Rossafari bump?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Animals sometimes get a Rossafari bump.
Yes, they have you to thank. Isn't that right, you guys?
Hi.
Lancey, will you let your son eat a peanut? Here you go, little boy.
Oh.
Oh, Gussie, scary.
Oh, he got one. Gus. Okay. Hi, Gus.
Gus is 9, and he is just kind of the agent of pure chaos at the moment. What is it, Coco? There you go, buddy. So, of course, I know. So, you know, they all have their nicknames, but I've actually given them all middle names.
Okay.
So that's Jeannie Beans. Genevieve Beans. There you go, Genevieve. Jeannie. Lancey is Lance Edward.
Nice.
And then we have Sokoto. Sokoto Scott.
Okay.
There you go, Coco. And then Jonathan David.
Do you ever find it, I don't know, I don't even know what the word is, fascinating, confusing, weird, wonderful, how closely we are related to these animals and yet how wildly different they are from us?
Yes. So I actually talk about that a lot in my keeper talks.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, they have facial expressions, they have emotions, like, you can tell so much from them, like, just in their social interactions and how they mother. And I mean, it is insane just how similar we are. But then you watch just like a full on fight break out and someone bites off someone else's finger or something and they just walk around like nothing happened.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. No, I couldn't do that.
No. Yeah. It really, every time I spend time with great apes at all, I'm just kind of like, so perplexed by how much we know they are so similar to us. And then they're so freaking different and weird.
Yeah. It's just, it's what? Jonathan, you're insane. I love you so much.
He's so good.
He's a model. And then that there's Ruby Jean. She's technically our dominant female, but she's okay. Not very good at it. She just really likes to stir the pot and start screaming and then have everyone else start screaming.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, great. If that isn't a good dominant role, I don't know what is.
Oh, be nice, Coco. You know she's scared of you. So what's interesting about our two youngest, our two little ones, we actually have to do a DNA test.
Okay.
Scandalous. It's like a Maury Povich episode. But so Jeannie's baby could be one of three individuals. It could be Sokoto, Lance, or even Gus.
Okay.
Gus is only 9.
Wow.
And then Gigi, because she's in our other group, she we actually had to do consortships.
Okay.
I kind of called them like conjugal visits. Obi boy. There you go, pumpkin. And so, but Gigi was flirt with Sokoto like that.
Wow.
She flirted with him because even though they're in separate groups behind the scenes, they could still see each other, smell each other.
Right.
And do all that. But so she would just stand in the overhead and look at him and just blow raspberries and head bob at him. And he'd come over and blow raspberries back. And so her baby is either Gus's or Sokoto's.
That's really funny.
So it'll be interesting to see, but we're going to have to wait till babies get a little bit bigger. Get that DNA sample.
Wow. That's such drama.
Uh-huh. Soap opera. The days of chimps' lives.
I like it. And yeah, does baby hold on like that the whole time?
Yep. She will. So Jeannie is our more confident mom.
Mm-hmm.
So she will. She's the one who will set baby down and kind of walk a couple steps back and see if baby will start to
crawl. Right, right.
That said baby. Her name's Ben, too. But, yeah. Whereas the other one, Gigi, just constantly has an arm. And if you see, Haji's paying attention over there.
Mm-hmm.
In the trees.
Yep.
He's always very interested about his nosy and noisy neighbors.
That's really funny.
Yeah. You guys are cute. And we love you.
Yeah, thank you for, getting treats. I guess it's not really
You thank me. There we go. No, this was very cool.
Yes. My dream would be to one day have just like a covered overlook, and also I love a training portal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe if I win the lottery. I'd pour it into work. Sure. Sure, that's fine. But yeah. All right. Well, good foraging. We're actually doing a procedure on your reed tomorrow.
Oh.
So fingers crossed that goes well.
Good luck at absolutely nothing. Just good luck in general, friend.
Except a hand injection. Thank you.
Yay. Well, thank you for this.
Oh, how cool was that? The chimps were so much fun, and it was so cool watching all of their interactions and stuff. I also have to tell you that Eric took me into the dome and gave me a tour and then like a behind the scenes tour, and I really got to see how everything works in that desert kind of biosphere that they have there. It's really cool. I actually got to go up to kind of the top and look over everything, which was really neat. And I got to see some just kind of cool behind the scenes stuff there. What an amazing facility. I love the North Carolina Zoo so much. Obviously, the polar bear and such episode and seal that I did earlier, last year now. And this episode made me so happy. And you know, I just happened to be gigging in North Carolina in February. Maybe we'll be able to get back. I'm hoping. I'm gonna have to talk to the facility and see if we can't bring you more awesome stories from this incredible place. But either way, what a treat to just get to experience so much time there. And again, don't forget, there is patron bonus content for anybody who is so inclined to become a patron, like my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Schenk, Dr. Stephen Williamson, and Barbara Bennett, and of course all my other patrons, who I love too. And I guess the last thing that I have to say is just remember, friends, it might be a new year, but the word credits backwards is still Steiderk.
The Ross Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Ross Safari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Ross Safari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.